When it comes to hard work, there's one important rule. Pick the right tool for the right job. That's why Chevy offers a family of Silverado pickup trucks designed just for the job. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and put a Silverado in your toolbox.
735 with John Landecker. Todd Bunch from Antenna TV. He's down the hall. He's in the studio. Hey, Todd, how you doing?
Thank you for having me, sir.
Sure.
I'm doing really well. Glad to be here.
Now, Todd is one of these producers for this podcast series we've talked about in the past called Nostalgia Stories. It's put together by Antenna TV. And why am I playing All Out of Love by Air Supply? Because they're one of the subjects of your upcoming podcast.
Yes, sir. Graham and Russell from Air Supply. Amazing. Lost in Love, All Out of Love, from Melbourne, Australia. They are actually one of the most grounded individuals we have ever interviewed. They are best of friends, and it shows. They bounce off of each other very, very well. It's a great interview. They talk about their early success and keeping their roots and staying grounded. They actually met during the production of Jesus Christ Superstar in Australia. That's how they met.
They were members of the cast?
They were members of the musical.
The musical cast.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
Yeah, they go on into that. And some of the most sing-alongable songs you could possibly think of.
And, you know, I'm going to play a little clip here from the beginning of the Air Supply Nostalgia Stories podcast.
We had a lot of luck during our career, especially in the early years. You know, we had Superstar, we had a record come out, which went to number one straight away. The single, then the album did the same thing. Then we opened for Rod Stewart, then in Australia. Then we opened for him in Northern America.
I mean, it was crazy. We'd been a band for 2 months when we first toured with him in Australia.
And there's a lot more where that came from.
Yeah.
Let me tell you.
They go on and on about Rod Stewart, and they just took off, like, immediately. So,
well, you know, I was I've been on the air so long, Todd, that I played all of those Air Supply songs when they first came out.
Oh, I'm a huge I love arena rock, and we have some good produced albums to explore in our lineup this month for July.
But, you know, I just wanted to say about Air Supply in the beginning, you know, it was like the rockers were Air Supply. But, like, you know, if you play All Out of Love now, I don't care where you are, people are going to start, reacting to it.
I used to be like that. When I was younger, right. I was like, mister, I'm in the punk rock only, and I only listen to these bands.
That's right.
And then as I got older, you start to, like, wander a little bit. Yeah. And, like, you know, like, I never thought I'd be a Genesis fan, ever.
Really?
And I know. And particularly the early Genesis stuff. So,
you never know.
For years I hated. So this is a funny story. So my father was a big music collector. He had 3,000 plus records and stuff. Oh God, he was crazy. And he was also an electronic designer, and he fixed an 8-track player that he had in like the 90s.
Oh man,
that he had dug up somewhere, and he fixed it and had it operating. But the only 8-track he had left was Rumors by Fleetwood Mac. And for years, I hated that album because my dad would just constantly play it. You just hear it groaning from the basement.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we're all like, we don't like that. But years later, I'm a Rumors fan. I'm sorry.
Well, you don't have to apologize for that. But I just, you know, if you only have one 8-track.
He had that. And I think he had In the God of the Vita, which drove us nuts, too. So, yeah.
And it probably had the, like, 28-minute version, too, I would think.
I'm sorry. It was a reel-to-reel. It wasn't an 8-track.
Well, it was a reel-to-reel.
Yes. It was a reel-to-reel. It was rusted out. I think he found it in an alley or something like that, and he was able to get it out.
Now, were these commercial reel-to-reel tapes, though? I mean, I know they did that for a while.
I don't recall. I guess he purchased them. He was big in the music. He had tons of vinyl. He had tons of 8-tracks. He had tons of reel-to-reels. Yeah. But unfortunately, we had a flood one year, and he lost a lot of it.
Oh.
And I think, uh-oh. And
there's an alarm now.
And I think the only one he had left was Rumors and In the God of the Vita.
Wow. You know, Air Supply, those guys are still touring.
They still are. Yeah. They look great too. I'll tell you. I want what they're drinking. So, but they're really, really, really nice guys, and they talk about how, like, you know, some people just go crazy when they get success, and
right.
how they keep grounded their whole lives. And very good interview. They're really nice guys. So
yeah, it sounded awesome. The lineup for, and correct me if I'm wrong here, for the Nostalgia Stories podcast.
Yes, sir.
You've got Air Supply, Ed Alonso.
Yes.
John, now I don't know the Dead Daisies.
So the Dead Daisies are up right now. They were up Monday. The Dead Daisies are essentially a supergroup of former members of other big bands.
Oh, really?
So we have John Corabi, who's the front man for the Dead Daisies. He was formerly in Motley Crue.
No kidding.
For a brief moment, he was on Motley Crue. He did not want to talk about it, but we got him. Yeah. And then Doug Aldrich is their guitarist, and he was he was in Whitesnake.
Sure.
But was famous. He gets asked a lot about his infamous. He was tried out to be in Kiss when he was about 18. And he it's another one of those stories where he just kind of groaned when I asked him about it. But I was like, people want to hear it. Sorry.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's who the Dead Daisies are.
No, I didn't know that Kiss had auditions.
I guess they did.
Who knew?
So, yeah. You'll have to hear it in the podcast.
Yeah, but, absolutely.
Yeah. They're real. Again, very grounded individuals. We talked about, you know, the old school way of producing music. Kohlrabi talked about how he learned Pro Tools during COVID, and that kind of led us to start talking about the old way of producing music and how, like, you know, playing live is where they get their inspirations from, playing live, and how they interact with each other. And they were really cool guys. Really, really cool guys.
Also, a part of this lineup is the actor Sam Jones.
My favorite.
Who Sam was, of Jones, course,
yeah. Flash Gordon.
Who was on Flash Gordon. Now, wait, let me see what clip I got here. I think this is Sam talking about the success and the three things that he looks for to succeed.
Yes. It was a huge success, box office, in every country except America. Seriously. But then again, when it hit America, it became top 10. VHS says. I've referred to it as the triple blessing. First blessing, no matter what we do, what industry, is getting hired. First blessing. Second blessing is if what we do it well, or the project does well. That's number two. Number three, what we're talking about now. You're talking to me right now, or I'm talking to you about Flash Gordon. Longevity. Triple blessing. That's what it is.
Oh, he's been a lot of stuff since then, but
yeah, he's in the Ted movies.
Yeah, both Ted movies.
Yes, but I'm big on the Flash Gordon movie. It was on TV all the time when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I think it was my first introduction to Queen.
Oh, who did the soundtrack. How about that?
Yeah.
Well, hold on a second. You got that, Brandon?
Yes.
You want to give us
you
a
have
little?
To have
this
to
is Flash Queen Gordon. Doing the Air Supply, not Air Supply, a Flash Gordon theme of all people.
Hero!
I think that's the action. Maybe I gave you the wrong cut.
It leads into the music, but I have it on vinyl somewhere. I know I do.
Well, you know, it's the one that goes. No, that's me. That's wrong. Yeah, yep. I guess I didn't get my clips right, but we'll find it.
Yeah, we'll find it.
Yeah,
go everyone, go out and Google it.
I mean, so, can you imagine? You know, you're doing
there.
This
you
thing.
Go. There
it
go.
Is. But, boom, boom.
I probably have at one point or two have been embarrassingly blasting that from my car driving.
Oh, I don't need
to drive somewhere.
I don't think you need to be embarrassed. That is awesome.
Yeah, I don't know why. It's not the greatest movie in the world. It's the story's not very good. It's your average, you know, superhero movie before. Yeah. It was trying totally to piggyback off of Superman and all that stuff.
Yeah,
but the production value. and the art direction on that movie, and it was very inventive and very it was just a beautiful movie to watch. And that soundtrack kicking in the background. I mean,
now here's the thing. You know that I'm probably not the only person to be motivated by something I heard on a Nostalgia Stories podcast. I have to be honest. I was not in the original viewership demo, shall we say, of Flash Gordon, the one we're talking about anyway. I mean, there've been Flash Gordons throughout the decades, but this particular
one—the inspiration for Star Wars,
indeed. So I'm listening to the podcast, and this guy sounds so great, and I'm like, I got to check this out.
He's a character.
So I did, and I'm like, I'm going to watch the whole thing now. Oh. I have to, because it's just like I hadn't seen it before, and it looks like a ton of fun. I'll tell you,
it's one of those movies that they constant. I think they played it on Channel 9 a lot too.
Wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, and it just was like you were just stopped in your tracks whenever it was on. If you were a 7 or 8 year old kid, you know, and it had one of my favorite people, Brian Blessed, was in it. He was the leader of the Hawkmen. You know,
the leader of the Hawkmen.
Oh God, another outrageously, you know, over the top actors, but
savior of the universe.
Yes,
yes.
It's such a fun movie, and I'm a big fan of stuff that's kind of stupid, but it's fun. This is a big example of it.
And you know, Flash Sam Gordon. Jones went through what I call a force period. In 1988, he did White Force. In 1989, he did Driving Force.
Yep.
He's
taller than
Maximum
me, and I'm
6'3". Force.
Yeah.
He was just like force movies.
The minute we walked up to him, I swear to God, he just was like, hey, how you guys doing? He was very invited. He just wanted to talk. And like he wasn't selling anything there. He was I'm Flash Gordon.
How did you track this guy down for a podcast?
We were in Burbank. We tend to go to these conventions where they have people. And he was one of the people there. We did a bunch of interviews at that particular convention. And he was just there. And, I mean, you saw this hair from across the room.
I was telling Brandon earlier today, it's like, I know that name. And if you don't know that name, if you saw him, you'd immediately recognize him.
Oh, yeah.
From the work that he's in. He was on, I forget what else, but a bunch of stuff over the years.
Primarily if he's known for Flash Gordon, and he knows it, and he's proud of it. So,
we're going to do some more of this because we got more people to talk about, and they're very famous, and you should hear about it when we come back on 720 WGN. Savior of the Universe, 720 WGN. I just fallen back there to another clip from Flash Gordon movie, and the man who played Sam Jones, who was the actor, is one of the great podcasts on the Nostalgia Stories podcast series.
Yes, posted every Monday.
Yep, from our friends down the hall at Nostalgia at Antenna TV, and Todd Munch is one of the producers. He's been on before, you know, Todd, come on.
I'm around.
He's around.
I'm around.
There's some more I want to get to, and it's 7:52 already, but we're not going to be able to get to them all, so stick around. Is that fine with you?
Sure.
And we'll get to it. Because now, where did I want to go next? That's always a good question.
I think John Lodge would be a good one to start with.
Okay.
From the Moody Blues.
You don't need the question. Just give me the clip. Talk about John Lodge from the Moody Blues.
Yes, the John Lodge Moody Blues, Days of Future Past.
This is one of the biggest groups in the history of rock and roll.
And one of the best albums ever produced, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely up there. Nights in White Satin, Tuesday Afternoon, come on.
You know what nobody mentions anymore about the Moody Blues?
What would that be?
It was the first original hit that they had, a song called Go Now, which doesn't sound anything like any of the albums that came after them.
Really?
Yeah, really. Hold on a second.
We'll have to play it.
Yeah. I'm going to see if I can find it right now.
Well, he came on later on. They were around before 67, because that's when Days of Future Past came out. You'll have to talk to my mother. She's a Moody Blues fan.
Call her right now. No.
Yes, call. She'll be. We'll be here for days if you call her.
Look, I know that was when I know the days of future past and all of that kind of stuff.
You said it was called Go Now?
I got it. I got it. And how complicated the production is and all that kind of stuff. But this is what I thought. This is from 1964. And that sounds a lot rougher, if that's maybe the an applicable term to, you know, the darkness of the ever orb finding themselves in the past of the Saturn. So, you know what I mean?
Well, I had the opportunity to talk to him twice. This is the first, the one that we were going to be posting is going to be the first time we talked to him. But the second time I talked to him, he really got into how they were classically influenced.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah.
And I think he came from classical upbringing. He was classically trained. And, at that time, they were all scrambling to get their own sound because they all wanted to be the Beatles. They all wanted they all were, like, desperate to get that, you know, Sgt. Pepper's out of themselves.
Sure.
And so they were all looking for their different niches, and they would definitely went the classical route. What I like about the music is just it transitions from different styles within a song. You know, like Tuesday Afternoon. You know, it goes from that, you know, slow sort of start, and then it gets into the more upbeat
right.
parts, and then it goes all. It's like classical. You know what it is? Music.
It's moody.
Yes, it is. He describes himself as moody all the time. I'm
no
a
kidding.
Moody. Yes, he calls himself a moody.
Did he say? Did it? Did he they says ever it with say the British. What the name came, how they came up with the name Moody Blues?
I don't believe we crossed that path.
I'd be interested. I mean. Blues, I can understand because they all the British musicians listened to American blues and all that when they were coming up. But moody, I think they were sort of. Unless, of course, they knew about the Bible Institute. I don't know.
I doubt it's that. You know, most band names come from pretty, you know, benign.
Yeah,
true. Areas. You know, they just kind of came up.
Do
with
we have that John Lodge clip? We're going to play a quick clip from the. Podcast, let it roll.
Music didn't seem to come into my life. It wasn't part of my life, and none of my family played. I went to school in Birmingham, and we had a fantastic orchestra there. And I think of an afternoon when I was like 8 or 9, there used to be what was called a quiet period. And we used to have to sit down, and the teacher would play a classical piece of music on the record player. But I suppose some of that must have gone inside me. But what really got me was rock and roll. The school I went to, there was a cafe, and there was a jukebox in the cafe. And every lunchtime, I'd go there, pop the coin in the slot, and listen to heroes like Little Richard, yeah. Fats Domino, Jerry Lee Lewis. And I was fascinated by the left-hand side, the boogie part.
Yeah, the boogie.
He says the boogie part.
Yeah.
Yeah, the boogie part.
That's another common thing is like Little Richard, you know. Those influences, especially the British guys. They all ate up American music like crazy.
Yeah, they sure did.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the bands did early on in their careers, did covers of... you know, Long Tall Sally. The Beatles did Long Tall Sally.
Well, the Beatles were all over the place.
You know, they did things like that. I'm trying to, and I'm sure the Stones did a ton of covers. They did a cover of the straight ahead, you know, blues tunes.
Yeah, I mean, think the Animals at the beginning did a bunch of covers.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think who else.
I mean, before they got into like more of their own groove, so to speak.
There was a lot of that. You never would think that the British would just tap into American music like that. And they still do. And quite frankly, I think they kick our butts musically a lot of times, too. I haven't thought about that.
Every
aspect. In my humble opinion, the British really nail it a lot more times than the Americans do these days. So I don't know.
The British nailed it. They blew everybody off when they came over in what they called that quote unquote British invasion, which was early 1963 or four till the present.
Yeah. But just even like metal bands, British metal bands, compared to
I'm not acquainted with the British metal band, as opposed to the metal bands from the United States.
Yeah.
They're all metal. As far as I'm concerned,
that will have to be a conversation for another night. I'll bring in some Iron Maiden, and we'll see what we could do. Yeah. But John Lodge was great too because he talks about vinyl. He's a huge advocate for vinyl. And he talks about that in the interview. And strangely enough, the Moody Blues were on MTV.
Yes, they were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was, that was a big thing for them, too. But
yeah, in the beginning, when MTV, which is really no longer exists.
Not in the way it was
back
in the day. No.
But if you were on originally, it was a big thing to be on MTV, and it helped a lot of careers. Hold on to everybody's thoughts, because we're going to do some more in just a few minutes on Nostalgia Stories podcast series coming up this month. Who's in line? We'll tell you when we come back. But right now, Saved by the Bell, which has something to do directly with what we're about to talk about. Todd Munch from Antenna TV, who was in charge, one of the producers of their Nostalgia Stories podcast series.
Yes, sir.
Is with us discussing the latest editions. And that brings us to Ed Alonso, right? I mean, I've got the name right.
Yes, sir. That is correct. Who played Max
on Saved by the Bell.
He is a career magician. He talks about how Saved by the Bell was an NBC-produced show.
He was down the hall.
And he was down the hall from our favorite Johnny Carson.
Carson, here we go.
Who was also a magician.
I used to sneak in and watch him. He was on stage one. I would sneak in and watch him rehearse. And a lot of times he would read his monologue. He had these big, giant cue cards that he all lined up in the front. He would just go from left to right to left to right. Or like, oh, I'll skip that one. And it was just fun watching him. And because I'm a magician, whenever he had a magician on the show, I was totally there to watch the first appearance by Penn and Teller and other great close-up magicians that have been on through the years. Because Johnny loved magic. Huge, huge magic fan. That's before he was doing stand-up comedy, he was an amateur magician and actually a pretty good one.
Yeah. I didn't know that Alonzo was a magician, but then I didn't really watch that much of Saved by the Bell either, because I was trying to be saved by radio.
Well, so the TV show Murphy Brown, which is on our sister station, Rewind Murphy TV, had a running gag of people who would try to be her secretary. He was one of them. That's why I kind of was like, we got to get him, because he was on Murphy Brown. It's one of those running gags where they would have like Pee Wee Herman, Paul Rubens was one. They would do like these weird, like, you know, Sally Field did a really good one. She was pretty funny. But they would have all kinds of cameos on Murphy Brown. So when he was there, I was like, we got to get him. He's Saved by the Bell, too. So everybody loves Saved by the Bell. But my favorite is him talking about Johnny Carson. Just to be able to do that, you know.
To have Johnny Carson down the hall.
Down the hall. Come on.
Yeah, I'm just going to peek in right now and watch him go over the cue cards.
You know, you'd think he'd be under, you know, there'd be armed guards all over the place. But yeah,
you know, I got to say, this has nothing to do with anything except what I was doing a junket years ago from a radio station in another town. No, it was for here. We were out in California, and I think it was from CBS, and they had us squired away in a room, and they would bring in the stars one after the other, Dick Van Dyke.
Oh, wow.
You know, to talk about this, talk about that. And then there were breaks, okay? So I got up and wandered around and took a turn. And I was suddenly on the set of Hollywood Squares.
Oh, wow.
I mean, you know, they weren't shooting anything. But I just sort of walked in. I said, well, what do you know? Hollywood Squares. And I turned around and walked back out in the hallway and almost bumped into Debbie Reynolds, who was like,
God.
Who was just like walking down the hallway, going somewhere. God. You know, it was like.
Singing in the Rain is one of my favorite movies.
Yeah. Well, it's like that's where everybody just goes to work. To us, it's like this great showbiz monument. To them, it's like, yeah, well, I'm at work, you know.
Well, you know, Hollywood Squares was the home for our the voice of Antenna TV, Shadow Stevens.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Yes. Absolutely. Who, let me tell you, if there's anybody I love working with, it's Shadow Stevens. I mean, he is, he's one of the best people I've ever worked with in this industry ever. So easygoing, and you could pitch him anything and he'll hit it. So you know, great, yeah.
There's a different mentality to, well, Shadow was also on the radio.
Yes, he was.
And there are...
He was just inducted in the Radio Hall of, Fame last year.
Yeah, and there were... But in California, in L.A., obviously, it's, you know, you have a lot of big-time media and personality, star, show business concentrated into a very small geographical place. And being on the radio does not, at least it didn't have the same weight as it did maybe here in Chicago with some of the famous people who were on the air. But these announcers had this sort of, not a side hustle, it was a totally legitimate business that they thought was just as important as the radio, and that was like voiceover and booth announcing and promos, and Shatter did a bunch of those. And a couple other friends of mine, John Leader, and names are slipping, not coming to me now, but what you're talking about, you know, like doing these voices of different projects, is a big deal there.
He, one time I was working with him, and I asked him to do something similar to, remember the Crazy Eddie commercials?
Crazy Eddie.
You remember the guy, this is insane, we got TVs at this price.
Oh, sure.
The old commercials.
Yeah.
Shadow's like, just hold my beer. He sent me a link to these federated stereo commercials that he did out in California, where he did a character called Fred Rated. And I did not expect anything like that out of Shadow, because I only knew like him from the radio and from Hollywood Squares. I didn't grow up in California, so I don't know those things.
Right.
They were some of the best commercials I've ever seen, and they're like crazy, like over the top, like just. And he talked about it, how they just their whole studio was in a van, and they would just guerrilla shoot these commercials. And if any of you out there are big Shadow Stevens fans, look up Shadow playing Fred Rated for Federated Group Stereo. They were like a stereo stores or music. What would you call them? Yeah. Stereo stores.
Stereo stores.
And,
we don't have them anymore, but yeah. Well, we do to a certain extent. It's like Guitar Center. But they were, you know, there's music stores that sold amplifiers.
Yeah, amplifiers.
Turntables.
And all that fun stuff. Yeah.
And had the albums and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. But he did a line of commercials for a long, long time, I think he did. And
Well, I had a friend of mine in college named John Leader. And we were on the radio together, like, when we were freshmen, you know, in college, just goofing off trying to be radio people.
Mm-hmm.
And he went out to Los Angeles and worked for a rock station out there called KHJ. And then I sort of lost touch with him. And then it was like every time I went to the movie theater, I mean every time I went to the movie theater and there was a trailer that came on, it was his voice.
Wow.
I don't know how many of these things he did.
Yeah.
But it was like he owned that corner of the voiceover market and did very well, needless to say. But they don't, you know, that's not the kind of thing that they do here in Chicago. I mean, they do, but not to the level that it is in Los Angeles, or at least was.
VO people are all over the place. Like you,
yes.
Like one of the guys who does VO for News Nation, is actually the voice for a cartoon I watched when I was a kid called G.I. Joe. He played Flint on G.I. Joe, and he is now... I forget his name. I'm sure I'm going to hear about it tomorrow. But yeah, we were looking for when we launched Rewind, we were looking for somebody who would maybe be the frontman for that. And
you got Rick Dees for a while.
We do have Rick Dees still. Yeah. Rick Dees was the one we got eventually. But one of the names that came up was I have to look up her name. But she was the youngest daughter on Give Me a Break.
Oh, I don't know who that is.
And she does a lot of VO work, too.
Oh, sure.
What is her name?
And, you know, and they'll do things like the Academy Awards.
Laura Jo Miller. Or she does a lot of VO stuff.
You know, the Academy Awards, the Grammys, you know, the announcer that you hear, the voice you hear off screen. There are a lot of radio people doing that.
Yeah.
Because that's the business out there.
Yeah. Well, there's so many cartoons produced these days, too.
You know, I just saw an ad that's just flying through my head right now. I don't have the particulars in front of me, but the ad is, and I think it's around the Chicagoland area either now or very soon, come meet the voice of your favorite cartoon characters or something like that.
They do that at conventions a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
We were going to do Comic-Con this year, and that was a lot of the people there were the voice actors from cartoons and whatnot.
Right. Well, it's big business. Todd, thank you for being with us. Todd Munch, Mensch. He's a mensch.
Yes, sir.
Don't you know he's a mensch from Antenna TV, and we've been talking about the new lineup, or the additions, rather, to their podcast series, Nostalgia Stories, for this month, and that included, let's go over them again.
We have
John Lodge from the Moody Blues.
Yes, right? Sir. Air Supply, Graham Russell from Air Supply.
Yeah.
We have my favorite, Sam Jones, who played Flash Gordon, and Ed Alonso from Saved by the Bell.
Yeah. Thanks for being with us again, and I'll look forward to the next time.
I look forward to it too, sir. Thank you for having me on. It's always a pleasure.